Oh, that's right. Good afternoon, everybody. It's the continuation of the political season right here on WCRS. Today, my very special guest is Philip Anderson, Major Philip Anderson. He was with the Greenwood Sheriff's Department. He retired a few years ago. He's been enjoying life, but I think he wants to be involved because he's put his name in the hat to become the next sheriff of Greenwood County. So, Philip, how you doing today?
I'm fine. Thank you for asking.
Absolutely. It's nice to be able to sit down and talk.
It certainly is.
Yeah. So, how have you, let's just do a little general conversation. How have you found campaigning? Have you enjoyed this? Have you ever gone out for another office, or is this your first foray?
This is my second time running for sheriff.
Second time. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And how have you found it running this time?
It's been a wonderful campaign. It's very unique and interesting to meet the community, which you normally wouldn't meet people on such a large scale if I was not running for sheriff. But being out in the community, I get a chance to meet people across the spectrum, and it's a wonderful thing. It's an education.
It is. I'm sure it is an education. Now, I was very interested when I was reading over your bio here that you gave me, your community service, Greenwood Chamber of Commerce, Hospice Care of the Greenwood Board, and Wesley Commons Senior Living Residential Community Board. It looks like you've made a practice of being involved in our community.
Certainly I have. The community, I believe, which I live, is so significant to my life. I love people, and there's a difference between peoples and things and stuff, you know, and all people gravitate to things and stuff, but I love to gravitate to people. That's one reason why I'm offering myself as sheriff. I believe that I have something to offer the community, which makes up what is made up of the people, and that's my interest in this sheriff race.
Where do you live?
Druid Hills.
Druid Hills. Mm-hmm. Druid Hills. Okay. I was just curious what part of the community you came from. And as you have spent a lot of time, you were in the sheriff's office for how many years?
I've been with Greenwood Sheriff's Department a little bit better than 25 years.
Okay.
I have better than 37 years in law enforcement.
What made you decide to go into law enforcement?
I've always been inspired to serve the community, and law enforcement was that interest. When I was a little lad, that was my interest, and I continue to gravitate to that, and that basically where I spent my entire life, basically in law enforcement.
Now, you were in the military?
I was.
What branch of the military?
The Army.
The Army?
Yes.
And where did you serve?
I served in Germany, Berlin, Germany. I served in Fort Hood, Texas, Fort Gordon, Georgia, and New Jersey, Fort Dix.
You went to New Jersey and you came out.
That's right.
Now, you write on your bio that you were a military policeman.
That's correct.
Yeah. How did you find your experience in the military?
Wonderful. Chance to meet, an opportunity to meet people from across the world. One thing about being in the military, we meet people that they're not partial. You treat it fairly and decent, and I that contributes something to my mentality, is to basically treat people fair and decent, and I experienced that in the military, and that have always been played a role with me.
Now, what do you think about the military? I guess you weren't in the draft, you just went into the military?
I did.
You did? What do you think that military experiences or some type of service is good for all of us?
Certainly it is. It brings discipline. I think every person needs discipline in their life. Military.
Particularly young people?
particularly young people.
Yeah.
I think, you know, I go on to say that I think that every young man and just not being biased, but I think every young man should be trained and have discipline in their life. And I think they should be mandatory that they serve a certain amount of time in the military. I think it would be good for them, and it would be good for our country.
Yes, you and I were talking about off the air before we came on about race relations, and you were saying how good things were in the 50s.
I won't say that everything was good, but when you make a comparison to where we are today and how things is basically coming to loose at the scene in our communities, very little cooperation, very little diversity in our communities. In our sheriff department, I look back when Jael Daniels was sheriff and Sam Riley was sheriff back years ago. We had more diversity in our sheriff department than we have now. And so often I hear the phrase, "We just can't find qualified people." I think that's what leadership is responsible for doing. And I don't think that's such a hard job. I think that we must commit ourselves to doing that and make sure that it happened, and don't look for excuses to say why we cannot find qualified people. I've heard that over and over again since I've been in law enforcement, that we cannot find qualified people. But I take issues with that. Yeah, there are people out there who are qualified. Everybody are not criminals. Everybody don't have a criminal record. There are people who are looking for jobs, and if we would use some energy to recruit them, you know, you have to have something to offer to recruit people. And if our department would have a attractive offer to give to those whom they're trying to recruit, it wouldn't be difficult to recruit qualified people.
You believe that? You think
I believe that,
that you think that then do you believe that we are our law enforcement is underpaid?
Well, I certainly do. They've come a long ways from the time that when I came into law enforcement to where they are now, but I think that they're headed in the right direction, and with like good leadership again. Everything rises or falls with leadership.
I agree.
And if we don't have the right leadership in place, it certainly makes a difference. And I think that you can see how the gap in the salaries with law enforcement have increased because leadership have changed. And I think that is very important in our society.
What do you think about the way, though? I mean, a lot of times it's brought up about all the problems that we have from Baltimore, the shooting in Charleston, the unrest, the 24-hour media. I've been told that people just don't want to put their lives on the line, and married guys don't want to leave a wife and children behind. I mean, do you think that is valid or not?
Well, I'm pretty sure a lot of that plays a significant role, but you know, I think today there are issues more serious than that.
Okay.
I think that there must be very significant training in law enforcement.
And when you think about body cameras,
I think it's a great idea and much needed, and it should have been used years ago.
Do you think that as somebody that is in law enforcement, that they have this questioning? I would question if I knew I was doing the right thing at that moment based on what I knew. But if I knew there were cameras, would you be more reticent, or would you question, am I going to be hauled up on, doing something wrong when I know I did what was right for that moment?
Well, sometimes we forget. Sometimes in the moment of time when things all of a sudden transpire, we forget about what's going on here and now and get involved, you know, and react.
Sure.
And I think
that's what training is about, right?
That's what training is about.
Exactly.
Absolutely right. You know, and I think after a few moments to reflect, we'll start disengaging because, in fact, we realize that there are cameras, there are things in place, but training gives you discipline. You know, it teaches us not to be so fast And to
well, sometimes it might mean your life or theirs, mightn't it?
That
I mean, serious.
Well, then again, that's where your training kick in. Your training kick. That's what training. Like I said, there's no substitute for training. You know, when you're trained, to look at every aspect of everything. Perhaps when I was a state trooper, you know, I was taught basically when I stopped the vehicle, never take my eyes off the vehicle until the stop was completed. You know, and I was taught how to do that. And I followed that training. And
have one eagle eye and one doing the other things.
That's right. You learn. You use your senses that right. you have, and you're able to take control of the situation by basically being alert and being trained and knowing what to look for. That's like I say again. That's what training is. That's what is so important in law enforcement. And then training bring on discipline. See, when we minimize our training, we get rid of our discipline, and we get rid of.
Do we have enough training in the in law enforcement in general? Just I mean, whether it's the sheriff's office, the police department.
No, no.
Do we skimp on that because of dollars?
Absolutely right. Even our criminal justice academy in South Carolina is not the academy it was years ago, because of the lack of funding. You know, we don't have the training. I go back to say back in. 10, 15 years ago, we had better training then than we have now at the Criminal Justice Academy.
Why is that?
Lack of funds.
Lack of funds. And or are they trying to turn out too many people? I think, isn't that one of the issues
that
too?
That can play a significant role as well. Yeah. You know, and the lack of quality training.
Now, I also understand that when we send somebody down to the criminal, the academy to get trained, they actually go on the payroll. Is that correct?
They're on the
payroll when they leave from here to go down there. And it could be, what, a year before they actually are earning their keep, for lack of a better way to say it, because they're in training at the academy?
Well, the academy basis is between 8 and 12 weeks now. And 8 and 12 weeks at the academy, you're back. But that's a good thing because of the fact there's a recruit do not have to go down there wonder about how they're going to support their families and how they're going to be supported.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good thing.
Okay.
And you can go there and you can give your full attention to training and what have you. That's a good thing. It works well.
Now, when you and I were talking just a few minutes ago, we were talking about having the right person going into a community to investigate, to know what's going on in the community. You mean we need to have black officers going into black communities?
Yeah, we have a lot of them. We have a lot of Mexicans in our
Hispanics, right?
Hispanics in our community. Yeah, and a lot, and then even not only that, females officers. We need diversity in our communities, and when those persons who are part of these communities go into those communities, they have an assessment as to what really transpires in these communities. They know where everybody live. They know where people live, and they know when they get ready to gather information,
mm-hmm.
intelligence, they know whom they could talk with and how they can gather that information. But if you send somebody from the other side of the track that don't know anybody over here, then that's where your confusion going to come in at, and that's when people really get angry with law enforcement. And this is how a lot of time when there's become such a problem between law enforcement and the community because of the fact of not having people out of those from our community go into those communities to work with those people to gather information who would voluntarily share information with persons whom they know out of those communities that would help make a difference in gathering that information.
Now, you know, one of the things that is a big issue, and since we're talking about communities, and is drugs. Mm-hmm. Such a big part of what we deal with, and it, you know, I hate to be trite, but is it the root of all evil with a lot of things because it leads to so many other things? How do you think we could handle the drug issues better in this community?
Well, let's go back again to what we just got through talking with. Basically, if you're going to send officers into community, you know, it'll be a diverse officers go into the communities. You know, if you're going into Afro-American community, you don't want to send everybody that goes to that community is not a part of that community, not a makeup at all.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're creating an environment that's going to eventually cause problems. And a lot of times we're not sensitive to those type of things. A lot of times people will in the community know that you are part of that community. They'll call you and give you information, tell you what things are. You know, this is where what's going on in the community, and here's where it is. And basically, you have the information in reference to what's going on before you get there, because they know you and you're part of that community. But when you have people going in there that are not a part of that community, they don't have any trust in, they don't know anything about, they're not going to open up and share with you. And that's why leadership and law enforcement must make sure that basically we're open and we have diversity in the sheriff department.
Okay. So, you know, we used to have Crime Stoppers here, you know, talking about opening up and leaving messages. Right. Now, of course, that's become South Carolina Crime Stoppers. I can't hardly feel that it is as effective as when it was a local thing here.
Well, you know,
or do you think it's even necessary? I mean, you know, maybe it's an outdated program.
It's always necessary. Every component, perhaps, to stop crime is necessary, and I think that we have to see what works in each community, and that's where your leadership come in. See, when you bridge entities of the community together with the law enforcement, I call it a bridge between law enforcement and the community. The community will share with you what is needed on each side of the road.
Mm-hmm.
If you're just operating by yourself and the community is not a part of the sheriff department, then you're going to have problems trying to discern basically what's going on and what needs to be done to combat these type of crime problems. And so coming together, bringing other entities together with the sheriff department.
Such as?
I like to say the county council.
Mm-hmm.
The leaders of our religious or organizations,
mm-hmm. Some of the nonprofits,
mm-hmm. All those people have valuable information to share, and periodically, if they could come together and sit around the table and see what each one had to offer and what we can do together, would certainly make a difference. But we don't do those things anymore. You know, we don't take the time. We don't get the.
Is that just here in our community, or are you saying in general we don't take the time?
Well, those places that utilize those type of skills and events, you find that their crime rate perhaps is combated and cut down. The communities that will not take the time to bridge the other entities together, you'll find out that the crime rate begin to escalate in those communities.
Are you saying we have that problem here?
I'm pretty sure we do in certain parts of our community. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I tell you what, we're going to join South Carolina Radio News right now. We'll be back. If you've got a question for Major Philip Anderson, who would like to be the next sheriff of Greenwood, please give us a call, 229-7984. That's 229-7984. We'll be back. Don't you go away.
Gold. Gold, more precious than any other time in history. Do you have gold? Do you need cash? Then bring it to SFG. That's Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood. Telephone 229-6613. Don't forget, we buy diamonds too. Paying the highest prices for your gold and diamonds at Sharp Facets Gallery.
Oh, that's right. I tell you what, we're having a real conversation here with Philip Anderson. He would like to be the next sheriff of Greenwood. That's right. He was with the Greenwood Sheriff's Department. He retired a little over 5 years ago, I think we have determined. And now he'd like to be the sheriff. We've been talking about a lot of different things. But, Philip, you know, one of the things that you and I were just talking about is how do we combat things like the drug problem. You, I believe, were saying that taxpayers need to pay for programs.
Absolutely. And we must use all resources necessary to rid our communities of drugs. And we have to have treatment centers for drug users. And then those that after treating, then those who have really violated the law, then they must spend their time where they are sentenced to spend. But I think that we must keep those components in place to deal with
what type of components are you talking about?
Law enforcement, strong law enforcement. People's
index. Well, they're arresting them all the time. All you have to do is open up the Index Journal. Every day there's a slew of people that have been arrested for different issues, from drugs to robbery to whatever.
Well, we can arrest them, but the key is to keep them off the street until they can get treatment. You keep letting the same people, putting them in jail and letting them out of jail, and they're back on the street and they continue to commit crime. We must get them off the street.
There is a program, Drug Court, I believe, was a program we have here in Greenwood.
Mm-hmm. Well, those programs, if they work and effective, then we need to continue those programs. Like I said, every component that's necessary, everything that we see that work. You know, I don't think no one has put their finger on any one thing in the community when it comes to drugs that work. But a combination of different things will certainly make a difference as we continue to be very vigilant and active in the communities and utilize all of those components. I think we can cut down on drugs, and treatment must be very, very important to this solving the drug crime in our communities.
Have you read up on any area that really has ever solved the problem of drugs? I mean, I'm trying to think of any area that can say we have solved the drug issue here in our country.
No, because wherever there's a demand and a supply, the two's going to come together, and I don't think the problem would ever be solved. But we have to have, again, strong law enforcement in place to deal with the drug problem.
Now, what are you talking about? When you're talking about strong law enforcement, I'm getting a vision of the Gestapo or something. Are that's what we're talking about here? I need you to specify a little bit more for the folks out there to understand what you're talking about when you say strong law enforcement.
Trained officers who know what they're looking for, how to arrest these persons in the community who are using drugs. Then strong prosecution, and then strong treatment. All those components makes a difference when we talk about drugs. You know, you can...
Well, there certainly is a big difference between the pusher and somebody that's using.
Absolutely.
The distributor, whatever you want, whatever you want to call them. Yes.
Absolutely. Those that are pushing, when you catch them, they're not the users, then they should be prosecuted heavily. And then those who are... users need to be given treatment and then basically serve their time for possession.
So you're not actually forgiving somebody a free ride. If they get treatment, they still need to do the time for the crime that they did.
Absolutely.
Even though they are now clean, shall we say.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Absolutely.
So that's a little different. Mm-hmm. Now, what about in our school systems and everything, the resource officers that we have? I would think that's a valuable role.
Yeah, absolutely. Resource officers have proven to be a valuable to our community, and particularly to our schools for safety and security. And I think that we should continue to increase and to not let that program die out.
Does it have a possibility of doing that?
Well, sometimes it look as to that effect that basically don't have the people don't have the interest anymore of supporting it like they once did a few years ago when the program was very strong and got started in the schools. But those programs were very valuable to the community and safety and security for our schools and what have you. And we should keep those intact. And when you have my key word is train officers who in the school system and know what they're looking for, they can certainly make a difference in the school system.
Now, do you think an officer should have discretion when he's dealing in a situation? Let's take the case of a marijuana case, whether it's one joint or whether it's a bag. I mean, should they have the possibility to say, okay, there's one joint in this car and that's it. You guys don't do this again. Or is the law the law?
You always got to use discretion in policing. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, you can...
Do you believe in giving your officers the discretion?
The discretion
to use discretion,
yes.
Based on what they see and hear at that very moment.
Absolutely right. Absolutely. And because of you think you're tough on drugs over here, where basically you would apprehend a person and charge them for having just the residue of drugs. Mm-hmm. Well, if you had not, and let that person get to know you, that you're not such a bad person after all, you're just trying to basically keep a safe community. Well, then when something really severe and significant appear, that same person that you help can really help you to solve a crime by basically having confidence in you that you wouldn't just out basically just to put them, charge them for just having residue of drugs, but you are a person that's trying to make a difference in the community, and they would come to you and tell you basically, here is drugs here that, you need to take a look at. And when you look, then you see you have a serious problem. That's the way you basically deal in the community, deal with drugs. People have to have confidence in you. They have to trust you. And they got to know that you're an honest person. And they will confide in you. And you'll be able to solve a lot of crime if you will have the community to have confidence in you.
You think that's the way it is today? I mean, I'm just asking because, you know, I think 10, 15, 20 years ago, I would kind of go with that. But I just wonder if that same philosophy today would work as well.
I think we're a little different today. One of the serious problem that we have, and I believe, in our society, and not just in law enforcement, we don't listen.
I agree with you there.
I think that's a serious problem within law enforcement as well. You know, we're too quick to act. But sometimes we just listen and observe, and basically we can solve more crime and be effective in more ways than one by just listening to what have transpired and what was going on than just acting so fast immediately. You know, that's a time you need to act immediately in law enforcement. But a sharp, trained officer know when there's time to really act. They'll know. Yeah.
You know, I think that the biggest theme I get through all of this is that you definitely believe in training. You definitely believe in being a listening ear in the community.
That's right. Absolutely right. I think that those two components are so significant to law enforcement. And listening, and when I talk about listening, I believe that the public got to believe that they have your ear, and that you're listening to them. They must believe that again that you are trustworthy, you're honest, and you're a professional individual, and they'll share things with you to help make a difference, and you don't have to. Law enforcement don't have to fight crime by themselves. The community will help you to fight it if we would invite them in the right way, and let them assist us. We're not the community against law enforcement. Mm-hmm. We just don't let them in. And I think that good leadership and leadership that's not intimidated over the public. Because you're gonna do the right thing. Mm-hmm. So when you're hiding things and not doing the right thing, you're not open. But when you're open, you allow the community basically to come in and ask questions if they have any, and to invite you to come across and to answer questions. But if you're intimidated because of the fact that you know that you have not done the right thing, and what have you, and then you're not going to be, you know, so.
Do you think we have some of that problem now with the sheriff's department?
I do. I don't think that the community really. There may be certain parts of the community, but not the whole. Mm-hmm. Don't have the opportunity to have an open door policy where they can come in and discuss what's going on in the community and things that affect in the community today. I think that that's not. in place.
That's not in place. Mm-hmm. Listen, I'm here with Philip Anderson. He is a candidate for sheriff here in Greenwood County. We're going to hear a quick word from our sponsors when we come back. We're going to have to wind this up, but I hope you found this an interesting and valuable conversation for those of you that are trying to make a decision about who you're going to vote for sheriff of Greenwood County. Hey, we'll be right back. Don't you go away.
McDonald's presents Confessions of an Ex-Hipster.
I loved cappuccinos, so I put on an itchy turtleneck and grew a goatee. But before I knew it, I was into French films, indie rock, and not bathing. Luckily, I got help from McDonald's McCafe cappuccinos. Now I'm watching football, wearing khakis, even high-fiving again. Thank you, McDonald's.
New McCafe mochas, lattes, and cappuccinos from McDonald's. With fresh ground espresso and real steamed milk, it's all the coffee, hold the attitude. At participating McDonald's.
Visit your local McDonald's in Greenwood and Abbeville today.
Oh, that's right. We're back here talking, as we have a tendency to do on Meet Me at the Diner here this afternoon. It's political season. We are here with Philip Anderson. He would like to be the next sheriff of Greenwood. And, you know, one of the things that we've talked about, and we've talked about the fact that you worked at the sheriff's department. You were a military policeman. You were at the detention center. You were a major over the detention center. How did you find that experience?
That's a unique experience. You get to talk with people who are incarcerated behind bars. A lot of them will share with you things. It'll teach you really how some things to look for in law enforcement that normally you would not have you would overlook.
Mm-hmm.
Inmates will teach you how to investigate, because they'll share with you what's going on when they have confidence in you.
Sure.
Yeah, and you begin to understand that there's two sides, that's the outside and that's the inside, and you learn to appreciate freedom, and you learn to interview those who are incarcerated, mm-hmm. and how to take information that they give you and discern whether there is any
truth,
any validity to what they have given you, and it helps you to solve a lot of crimes. And you meet a lot of people in jail that will help you, give you information for life if you're open to it and know how to deal with them.
Are you telling us you have a little black book? Of information I have learned. Are you getting ready to write a book, maybe?
I think that's a good idea.
A good idea. There you go.
Just planted something in my head.
Okay, the little black book. Things I learned being on the other side of the bars. There you go. Philip, you know, so you spent time doing that. Now, not to bring up very much, but, you know, there's been this case where the guy died and Alvin Johnson has come forth and really questioned counsel on it. Do you have any idea why this is coming forth at this time?
Well, you think you have citizens that are concerned, that are trying to ascertain information, to see what is going on. And sometimes when we are quiet on things and nothing's being said, people's become very skeptical about how things are being handled, and mm-hmm. they ask questions. And I think it's legitimate to ask questions, and I think we should be in position to answer questions legitimately. Don't allow the questions to feel like they were being become intimidated over questions that's asked. I often say, when we're doing the right thing, you don't have to be intimidated with questions people ask.
Sure.
You know, when you're honest and open, whatever they ask.
Do you think we have transparency issues in the sheriff's department? Well, that's a leading question, Ann.
that's an open question.
Yeah.
And I think that that's for each one to kind of discover themselves. But I think that the public can kind of sense that themselves, those who had experience with the sheriff's department can better answer that probably than I can.
What would be your policy as far as not only cases such as this one that there's a lot of question about, but just as far as the running of it, if a person had a question about something that was going on or that they heard of or that their family was directly affected with, how would you go about handling that?
I think when top leadership assume the role and answer the questions about passing on to third parties, mm-hmm. I think you cut down on a lot of speculation and all. You know, if a person has a question and they request my presence to speak with me, I must give them the opportunity to come in. If they're a citizen of Greenwood County, they elected me. I must allow them the privilege to come and to share what it is that they have on their mind and give them a chance to ask questions and answer those questions. Sometimes you can't give out information about a lot of things because it hurt the investigation. But I should be able to allow those persons to come and to answer the question that I can legitimately answer without going into the case to damage the case. And that would be my policies, basically, that some things I want to handle myself in a town, in a county as the size of Greenwood. The sheriff can assume roles that he can be directly involved in some things. What have you. And these are some of the things perhaps that I would want to be personally involved. And I want to have an open door, basically, where if a person want to talk with me, they can call in and get a date when I'll be available. They can come in and give those person a date and I'm available to them and allow them to ask questions. And when you don't ask a question timely, people think that you're hiding something sometimes, you know, mm-hmm. and what have you. But if you're open and share, and people know if you're honest or not, you know, that's one of the things. They know. And so
you would directly communicate with people. Is that what I'm getting at?
I would directly communicate with people, yeah.
Okay, you absolutely. Wouldn't go through somebody else communicating for you?
No, I would not. No, I would not. You know, some things I want to handle myself. Okay. And those type things, where there are serious cases of that magnitude, mm-hmm. where there's questions that and people want answers, I would take that on personally myself and answer those questions to the best of my ability without giving out information that would somehow
jeopardize the case.
Yes.
And that is a problem, isn't it, when you have a case, and particularly if it involves your officers and then SLED gets involved, that makes it a problem from the public's perception of it.
That's exactly right. But now if the public feel that it's in good hands and that you're going to be trustworthy and open and honest with them, they allow you to do your investigation and get out of the way. But if they feel that you aren't open and trustworthy and you're hiding things, then they will come down on you like a ton of bricks, and that's when the problems really begin. But if we just share information as we go, I think that the information that we feel that would help the public somewhat to have an idea of what's going on, I think it'll help the case. And sometimes people won't, you wouldn't have that many people's coming in to ask questions about certain things.
Now, we're going to run out of time here, but I do want to ask you about transparency with the budget. How do you feel you are about handling budgets? Because that is a big part of the sheriff's job too, isn't it?
Well, I handled the budget back in the detention center. So I ran the detention center. Matter of fact, I handled, at any given time, I had better than 200 inmates and probably 50 to 55 employees in the detention center. And budget, basically, what I managed, what have you. So I know the expectation of budget there in Greenwood.
Okay.
Sheriff's Department.
Okay.
And I know how it is put together and things of that magnitude. And so that would not be a problem for me. Matter of fact, I said that I wouldn't be on the job training at Greenwood Sheriff's Department. I go into Greenwood Sheriff's Department with knowledge, know how to function. And I think that's one of the things of electing the sheriff is the fact is that we have too many problems to deal with on the job training. I think we need people that know the environment of Greenwood Sheriff's Department, and people that, and then the key is then putting people around you that you know that you can trust and have confidence in, and people who
you are listening to WCRS right here in Greenwood. I had to say that. Okay, go ahead, finish your thought. Okay. I'm sorry.
And putting people around you that you trust, mm-hmm. people who know the framework of operating with budgets and all of that is important, and having those people to make a difference.
My last question to you is, you've been retired for about 5 years. Are you sure you're up to the challenge of being a sheriff? And then I'm going to give you 2 minutes to tell us why you should be sheriff. But, 5 years, that's a long time being out of the workforce here now, Philip.
I feel that I'm sharper.
Sharper?
Than I were when I was in.
Well, your wife is sitting here. Should I ask her?
Yeah, ask her.
She says yes. He's sharper. Okay,
I've had
ahead.
Time to reflect. And I often say that when you're in the forest, you can't see the trees for the forest. Mm-hmm. But when you stepped away, you can evaluate things. And I think that I'm sharper. I think I can bring more to Greenwood Sheriff's Department than the average person. Like I said, I've worked there long enough. I know the environment. I know what it entails.
And you still want to do this job?
I would be an excellent sheriff for Greenwood County. I think the citizens of Greenwood County would be pleased with me being sheriff. I love, number one, yes, I love people. And then again, and all people. And I think that I can bridge the community and the sheriff's department together to make a difference to combat crime. I think all the entities of Greenwood Sheriff's Department will come together where basically everybody that have an interest in Greenwood County will have an opportunity to share. I think that's what's missing in our community, and I would like to give them the opportunity to be a part and working together with the community to make a difference.
Is there anything else you'd like to say here today?
One of the things that I think that makes a good sheriff that in order to be a good sheriff must have the ability to manage, communicate, listen, facilitate, mediate, supervise, and make tough decisions. He must be a strong leader who know how to cooperate with the community. I think that's what makes the difference in being a good sheriff, and great experience. I have the experience. I bring all of that to the table, and out of all the candidates, the other four candidates, they are from my perspective, they are good people. But I think I'm the best person for the job at this junction, in Greenwood County.
So I guess you'd like to ask the people to vote for you.
I certainly would. I asked for their vote on June the 14th in the primary. I solicit your vote, and we'd be pleased to have your vote. And I thank you very much.
And your name is?
Philip Anderson, candidate for sheriff, Greenwood County. Thank you today for being here.
Thank you, Philip, for being here. We sure appreciate you taking an hour out of your time and sitting down and telling us about yourself. Let's say that's a wrap here this afternoon. We've just been talking with Philip Anderson, he's a Democratic candidate for Greenwood Sheriff here. You will have the opportunity to vote on June 14th. Make sure you put this on your calendar. Make sure you do it. And as just a little note, I am a little bit shocked and surprised that at the very last minute that all the different groups have decided to have a meet and greet on the same day. They start out at the chamber that morning, 8:30, for about an hour. Then there is a meet and greet at the Little River Missionary Baptist Association up there on the 9th, same day, 6 to 8. And then there's also going to be one for Citizens for Better Government over there at the Veterans Center. I don't even know the time yet. Do you know the time, Philip? Do you know the time?
6 o'clock.
Is it 6 to 9 or 6 in that same time frame?
Right.
So kind of going to be a problem to be able to decide where to go. But let's hope that what you've heard this afternoon gives you more information. And, of course, tomorrow we will have Dale Kittles with us here from the 4 to 5 hour. And at 5:15, Freda Sartain, who is a candidate for clerk of court. Dale Kittles, of course, is another candidate for this sheriff's race we're dealing with. Hey, that's going to do it for me. This is WCRS right here in Greenwood. Bye-bye, everybody.